through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
The Seattle Seahawks taking on the Philadelphia Eagles tonight for Monday Night Football. And since the start of the show, Jake, today, we've been talking about how so much lies on this defense with a chance to take advantage of a struggling Philadelphia offense. Eagles are 26th in total offense, 28th in the pass game. Pass game is just abysmal, 24th in points per game. And we were talking about how this is a chance for the defense. It's a chance for Carlos Dunlap, for Jamal Adams, for the pass rush, for the secondary, Shaquille Griffin coming back, to get right, to get some interceptions, force turnovers, get sacks against an Eagles offensive line that's giving up 40 sacks this season. But, Jake, I don't actually think it comes down to the defense. Yes, that's incredibly important, and yes, we'll be talking about the matches there that they need to win, but this game could come down simply to Russell Wilson versus Carson Wentz. Because when I'm looking at these two teams, the thing that they both have in common is they live or die by their quarterback. The Eagles' defense isn't awful. It's not the best, but they are 10th overall in total defense. That's driven in large part by their pass. They're allowing just 209 yards per game. That's sixth best in the league. They've struggled against the run, but they do have 34 sacks. That is four fewer than the league-leading Pittsburgh Steelers. So their pass rush has been really solid. They've been able to get to quarterbacks. They've been able to stop opposing passers from beating them downfield for the most part. But none of it matters because they're -9 in turnover differential. Carson Wentz has buried them. And so I know that there are Eagles fans looking at the Seahawks passing defense and saying, hey, here's a chance for Carson Wentz and the Eagles to get right. But that might not end up mattering because as long as Russell Wilson plays well, the Seahawks live by him, right? The same way that Carson Wentz sinks his team. If Russell Wilson continues to play like Russell Wilson, I don't mean the weird version of Russell Wilson we saw for a couple weeks, you know, earlier this month. I'm talking about the Russell Wilson that we've seen since his time in Seattle over the last several years. If he continues to play like that Russell Wilson, I see no reason why this won't be a Seahawks win.
Yeah, it's a great point. And obviously it's the most obvious one in terms of Russell Wilson, right? But as we have looked at Carson Wentz and Russell Wilson, and you sent this, you know, really fascinating comparative, and you just laid out some of those stats that you had just mentioned in terms of Carson Wentz. I had to take a double take, honestly, Stacey, when you were telling me, you know, the stats of the Eagles and and then them being -9 in turnover differential. That one really, you know, caught my eye because it does go to show how important your franchise quarterback is. And when you are looking to your franchise quarterback to be the stabilizer, when everything else goes wrong, can your franchise quarterback be a stabilizer? Clearly Carson Wentz cannot. Russell Wilson can. And we watched Russell Wilson over the last month go through a really tough stretch, Stacey, that we have not seen him go through before. Now we've seen him come out of the other side of that. And this still is going to revolve around Russell Wilson. This Super Bowl run, this isn't about the running game. This isn't about the defense. This is ultimately going to be about Russell Wilson and how he plays. Does he play A, turnover free? B, does he continue to keep playing at the level that he showed he's more than capable of, particularly in the first 5 weeks of the season? He also carved up a 49ers defense that is ranked, you know, fifth or sixth in the NFL in a lot of defensive statistical categories. You know, with them even being injured, doesn't matter. They're still a very good defense regardless. So for this team to really become a Super Bowl contender legitimately, Russell Wilson needs to show a couple weeks here that he can get back to that form that we saw earlier in the season.
Yeah, and there's not every team is like this. I know that it's easy to say, like, well, you always live or die by your franchise quarterback. But you look at the Rams. I know this wasn't necessarily the case last night. But Jared Goff can have an okay game, and they can still win because their defense is so solid. And their receivers are so great, right? You don't need Jared Goff to be the best player on the field in order to win a game. You need Jalen Ramsey to. You need Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods and Aaron Donald to be the best players on the field. And usually they are. But the Seahawks and Eagles have that weird thing in common where Russell Wilson's play is able to kind of gloss over, to fill in some of the cracks of some of those weaknesses for Seattle. And that doesn't mean they're not there, right? I would say every playoff team right now has a fatal flaw. And some of them are more prominent than others, but every team has a fatal flaw. And the Seahawks are not immune. They have theirs. They have several of them, and we all know what they are. We've been talking about it for 10, 11, 12 weeks now. They have that in common with the Eagles. Carson Wentz just hasn't been able to do it. We were talking about Jalen Hurts. I don't think him coming in helps that at all. So it just comes down to Russell Wilson playing well. Russell Wilson plays well, you should win this game. Are you at all worried about Russell Wilson tonight in any way?
No, I'm not. I'm not worried about Russell Wilson tonight. It's one of those things that for him, I think he needed that one performance to come out of it. He needed that one performance of playing good, clean football, resetting his mindset. That's where you saw him take off, Stacey, 10 times. 10 times in the game against the Arizona Cardinals, all through passing plays, because he was being extremely decisive in his decision-making. And if he can continue to be decisive in his decision-making, whether it's throwing the ball away, whether it's running the ball, or delivering the football, that decisive confidence is what stands out. And that's going to eliminate a lot of the turnover issues that he had this last month. He just needs to continue to keep building. I believe he's put that in his rearview mirror, and it's far, far down the road from where he was. But with every single performance removed from that, that is building positively, that to me is going to be the difference for this offense to explode at the level it can. We saw what a difference Carlos Hyde could make. We saw, hopefully tonight, we're going to see another spark when you add Chris Carson to your lineup in both the run game and the passing game. I think that you're also going to see a spark as you build that confidence level back up into Russell Wilson, and he's not having to feel like he needs to play hero ball in order for his team to win, that the defense and everybody is building together. That's where I'm excited about where Russell Wilson's overall performance can end up being, because you need him to be at his A game, mentally, physically, when they face the Rams, you know, at the end of this four-game stretch.
Is that going to look like it did week one? Because week one you did have Chris Carson. I mean, you had him for several weeks after that, but we've seen what the offense looks like with Russell Wilson cooking, for lack of a better phrase, and Chris Carson out there. Are we going to see that version of it? I know that was in September, and the weather has changed, and you might be leaning into running the ball, especially against an Eagles defense that's allowing 130-plus rushing yards per game. But are we going to ever see that week one version of Russell Wilson? Is that
who
we're
going to see? You're going to see it at some point throughout the season, the rest of the way. You're going to see it over the next 4 weeks, I believe. I don't think versus the Rams you'll see it that way. I believe it'll be a much more balanced approach. And, you know, it was really fun, you know, having those Thanksgiving mashups that we do over the holiday weekend, where we, you know, cross over and talk to different people. Had a conversation with Brock Huard, and as we were talking through it, it was more about, as I was talking through it with him, it was more of the realization that, you know, at least for Brock, that this isn't about Russell's passing attempts. This is about letting him control the game, letting him control whether it's a pass or a run, letting him keep the offense one step ahead. And that was something that they were missing versus the Rams, Stacey. They were not able to stay one step ahead, and the Rams had no real threat of a legitimate running game for an entire 60 minutes. And that's what you're eventually wanting to see. But through the playoffs, make no mistake, yeah, you're going to need Russell to have one of those big-time performances you know, down the stretch here, no question.
Does any stat about the Eagles' passing defense make you nervous? Because I know that you had been looking at some of the tape. I hadn't looked over their wins. or games in which the Eagles defense really, really excelled. And they've been imperfect too, right? Like they've let games get away from them too. For the most part, though, they have far outperformed the offense. So it is a matchup where the Seahawks offense and Russell Wilson aren't necessarily going against the Eagles' greatest weakness. They will have a challenge there. So you've got that defensive line that's getting plenty of sacks. I mean, does any aspect of it make you most nervous? If we're talking about the game coming down to Russell Wilson, What needs to happen?
Well, the part that makes me most nervous, the matchup that makes me the most nervous, Stacey, is right tackle. You're going to be without Brandon Shell. Who are you going to put there? Is it Jamarco Jones or is it going to be Cedric Obwehi? And either one of those two is going to be charged to go up against Brandon Graham, who is, you know, the Eagles' best edge rusher. And he's been a very good, consistent edge rusher for the Eagles for quite some time now. So that's the one matchup that concerns me. Obviously, Fletcher Cox can cause a lot of disruption. They have Javon Hargrave as well, a part of that lineup. So they've got disruptors on the defensive line. Can the Seahawks offensive line handle and manage that early in this game? The one thing that stands out on tape, there's two things. One, the Eagles defense plays hard. They play hard, they play physical, they play downhill. They're going to make it a challenge for you, particularly to start games. You could see them getting worn down as the game goes on because either Carson is not playing well or you just have a team that's continuing to keep pounding it away at them in the second half of games. The other thing that stands out as well is that they are ranked sixth in passing defense, Stacey, but they haven't been challenged by a true, legitimate, good passing offense. The one time that they were was against the Rams and the Steelers, and they lost both of those games 38 plus points. So you're going to have another one of those type of offenses with the Seattle Seahawks, and they're going to leave a whole lot of one-on-one matchups. They play a lot of cover one, they play a lot of cover three, and that is where I think DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, and Russell Wilson will have an opportunity to have a big night. And so those two things to me, Stacey, that matchup of the front and the way that they play early in games is something that the Seahawks are going to have to handle. But on the flip side of that, I think the Seahawks offense is going to present a huge challenge to the Eagles that they've only had to face twice this season and have not had much success with.
Yeah, the defense is, I know I just said it's solid, but you make a good point. It isn't solid enough to overcome Wentz. You know what I mean? This isn't the Rams. This isn't the 49ers. This isn't a defense that can overcome mistakes by your quarterback. Like, if you can get ahead, especially quickly, if you can hit Carson Wentz early, make him uncomfortable early. He's already clearly uncomfortable in the pocket, making plenty of mistakes. I think this could get out of hand. I mean, this could be the first game we see the Seahawks have a real solid lead. I'm talking like, 10 plus points. And I know that it might end up being one of those games. The way I explained it to a friend who asked about it, she was like, do you think we'll win? And I was like, I think it's going to be one of those games where you're just kind of nervous throughout and the entire time you're thinking this game should be more lopsided than it is. And then they win in the end anyways. And it doesn't matter. So I'm talking a big game right now because statistically, when I'm looking at this page and when I'm looking at how they should perform, I see no reason why this shouldn't be 10 plus points. But I mean, man, you never know. It's like that tweet that goes around every single Seahawks game. The Seahawks literally never play a normal game. That's how it's going to be again.
Yeah, they never play a normal game. And that's why you can never count on them to win handily in any game. But if there is an opportunity to make a statement, Stacey, I think this is the game. I think this is an opportunity for you as you get on this four-game stretch here that you can separate yourselves from the Eagles. And I agree with that assessment, though. I don't necessarily think that this game is going to be a blowout from the very beginning. I think this is going to be a hard-fought battle all the way through three quarters, and in the fourth quarter, you start to separate yourself away from the Eagles. I hope I'm wrong, because as we come up here in our four-down territory, I'm going to say something different in terms of one of my keys to the game for the Seahawks, but I could very easily see it being that type of matchup, that physical style of matchup for three quarters.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by the Pro Club, and speaking of four-down territory, let's go ahead and get to it now.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Mac and Jack's African Amber Ale.
With Jake and Stacey.
You live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it. First down, Jake. Which matchups are favorable to the Seahawks tonight?
Well, I'm going to give you two. One for each side of the ball. The first one, to me, the biggest key of the game is going to be the Seahawks' run defense versus the Eagles' running attack. The Seahawks come in as the third best. Yeah, you heard me right. The third best run defense in the NFL. I think they've proven over the last couple weeks that they have been a legitimately solid run-stopping unit, that it's not just teams that are, you know, willing to forego running on them and just going to the pass. They have a very stout defensive front that has handled the run very well. They're going to have to do that yet again versus a group in Miles Sanders and Boston Scott, who are no slouches in terms of the running game. Miles Sanders is a guy who is averaging 5.7 yards per carry, Stacey. 5.7.
It's a lot of yards.
It's a lot of yards. But neither one of those guys, Boston Scott or Miles Sanders, are true power backs. Those are guys that see cuts, see lanes, like to get out on the edge. And I think if the Seahawks can make this more of a matchup where they can control the edges, keep everything contained, and force those guys inside into the teeth of that defense, they will be able to shut down that running game. So no, that to me is number one. Number two is going to be on the offensive side of the ball. Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf, they have to have big games. I think for this game to be a 2-point or 2-score comfortable type of game for the Seahawks, DK and Tyler Lockett need to perform well. And if you remember, this was kind of DK Metcalf's coming out party, the way he finished the season against the Philadelphia Eagles in their playoff matchup. He had the most receiving yards of any rookie in NFL history against the Eagles. He's going to get plenty of one-on-one matchups. And I think that if those two guys can feast and feast early and often, that will be very favorable to the Seahawks tonight.
Second down. Stacy.
Curtis.
Hello.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm okay.
Good to hear.
Thanks.
What are two areas where Carson Wentz ranks last among all quarterbacks?
All right. So interceptions and fumbles are one of these, but I'm going to exclude that. We've already talked about it plenty. So instead, I'm going to focus on two other statistics. Both clearly passing stats, but specifically when it comes to accuracy. So his completion percentage of 58.4% is lowest in the league with all qualifying passers. And notice how I said average the 58.4%, because there are many games where he's completed less than that. He completed just 52% of his passes in week 6 against Baltimore. That was a loss. Clearly, he was 21 of 40, completed 55%, 56%, 57%. He's only had 4 games, you guys, of a completion percentage over 60%. Just consider that, like, with Russell Wilson, you're hitting like 80 plus. And I know 60 something percent used to be considered years ago pretty decent, but that's just not the case anymore. You need to be hitting well over that. And so 58%, not great. He has not been accurate. And that has not just been on his receivers, because the other area where Carson Wentz trails all other qualifying passers is off-target percentage. So these are throws that are off-target. He's 23% of all of his passes have been off-target. So I know that he hasn't had the best weapons this year. I know the Eagles are getting injured this year, and I know the offensive line has dealt with a lot of change and movement. But Carson Wentz has not been accurate at all.
Third down. Jake, who are the Seahawks that should shine brightest under those Monday night lights?
Anybody involved in the pass rush will be my answer. I'm looking at Carlos Dunlap. I'm looking at Jaron Reed. I'm looking at Jamal Adams. This is a group that should really have a lot of success tonight. I think that they should have 5-plus sacks tonight. I don't think it's very bold in saying so. This is an opportunity unlike any other if you're this defensive line. And if you're truly turning the corner, you've been able to get average of 3 sacks and more. You were able to get 7 versus the Buffalo Bills. This is a quarterback in Carson Wentz who is not firing and pulling the trigger the way that he needs to. He is hesitating, which I think is going to buy some time for this Seahawks front to get home, and for their blitz packages to get home. So I think that that is the group that will shine brightest tonight. Who should shine brightest tonight? This is an Eagles offensive line. I want to reiterate it, and we're probably going to say this again. The unit that they are putting out there is unlike anything I've ever seen before. This is a bad group. Jason Kelce is the only guy who is a part of their original starting lineup from, you know, week one. He is their starting center. Outside of that, both tackles are out. Both guards are out. They are on backups to backups right now in that starting lineup for their offensive line right now. This should be a huge, huge game for their pass rush.
Fourth down. Jake, I need two things from you the Seahawks have to do to win.
Oh, two things. All right, so we talked about the style of game earlier, what we think it will be. Here's what I believe is a key for this Seahawks team. If you want to put the game away and put it away early, you got to start fast. And it's not just the first drive. It's the first quarter. It's the first half. You have to just really take it to this team in terms of setting the tone from the very beginning. The Philadelphia Eagles are not built to come back right now. They are not built to pull off last second heroics. They are really, really hurting in terms of their offensive talent. They're hurting in terms of their morale. And if the Seahawks can set the tone physically, I think that's really going to put you in the best position. So the key to start fast, both offensively and defensively, I think will all but guarantee that you win this game if you're able to get up two scores in the first half. That would be huge for this team. The second thing is you got to get back to creating turnovers. This defense feasted on turnovers. What we talked about in the beginning of the year. Well, they're playing bad, but they're making big plays. But they're coming up with the big turnovers that are really turning the tide of each game. So far in the last three games, zero turnovers. They have to get back to turning the ball over. And what better way to do that than to play the quarterback who's struggling the most and has the most turnovers out of anybody in the league in Carson Wentz?
My question for both of you guys. We had Trey Flowers on with us for a special Wednesday edition of The Huddle, and he promised us, better not be lying, he promised us that he would get the next Seahawks turnover interception.
Holding you to it, Trey.
Yes, he did.
I am also holding him to it. Who would you bet actually gets it? It could be Trey Flowers. That might be your answer. I was really thinking about this. I was truly thinking, like, okay, who is going to be? Because Carson Wentz also leads the league in fumbles. He's got 10 fumbles. So this could be a scoop and score. Who is the next Seahawk that gets, doesn't have to be a pick six. Let's just say the next interception. I was thinking Quandre Diggs. I've seen a lot of people, though, especially to Jake's bold take Monday tweet, say Jamal Adams. I think because Jamal Adams has been talking about, hey, you guys are judging me for my play and coverage, but I'm actually pretty good. Heretofore, I'm going to get an interception. But my money's actually on Quandre Diggs. And I think because I said this, it'll be Jamal Adams, but I think that's who I'm going with. What do you guys think? This could be a fumble recovery, too. So you could say Puna.
Those are two good guesses because it's in the middle of the field. Trey Flowers will probably get more attempts thrown his way than Shaquille Griffin. Spider-Man KJ Wright has been pretty good in terms of getting to the flat and has had a couple turnovers himself. But I'm going to go to somebody who is the least likely. The least likely. And that is Harrison.
Whoa.
Snacks Harrison is going to be getting not an interception.
Jake.
He's going to get a fumble recovery.
That's
yes.
Not. How far is it going to make it?
350 pounds of him. He doesn't have to go far. It's, you know, somebody else is going to come from the edge. He's going to get the ball.
Right.
They're going to smack the ball out. And Snacks will be right there just waiting to fall on that ball. All 360 pounds of him.
Curtis.
I want to see him pick it up and run with it.
I do too.
Amazing.
I want to see the version of Al Woods week one against Cincinnati. Was this last year? He scoops up a fumble and Pete Carroll was on with Danny and Gallant and was like, this guy in his eyes looked like he really thought he'd run like 60 yards for a touchdown. Like the look on his face was like, I've got this. And he goes down after like a yard. All right. KJ, someone texted in KJ. If you missed the show, you can always listen via the 710 Sports app powered by Dubin Law Group. The timeline's next.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacy.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It's the timeline on Jake and Stacey, reading you guys top trending stories you're going to see on your own timelines. Let's go ahead and get started with former Seahawk Marshawn Lynch talking with Peyton Manning about his pregame routine. He says it involved taking a shot.
You believe in superstitions? I always like to read the program front to back for whatever reason before the game. You know, by the end of the season, you know where every accountant for the Colts went to college. What right, were yours? Right. What was your
my superstition was that I needed to have maybe a shot and a half before every game.
Of?
Hennessy. What you mean?
I was thinking, yeah. Gatorade. Toradol. I don't know what Toradol. I was thinking.
Hell no.
And there's a bar right there in the locker room in Seattle. Schneider and Pete
bar
Carroll.
In my backpack.
Got it. The backpack.
I like the appalling rant. What do you mean of? Obviously, I'm talking about Hennessy. And then Peyton Manning's comment about Toradol. Toradol, let me tell you what. It's great.
I love every aspect of this. The just complete contrast between Peyton Manning and Marshawn Lynch's pregame routines. Peyton Manning is diving in, trying to study up on just random people within the organization, what they do, where they're from, all those things. And Marshawn Lynch is taking shots before a game. Marshawn Lynch has been a legend and is a legend for a lot of different things that he has done, whether it's, you know, community service base, his funny personality, the way he played the game in such a punishing, bruising way with Beastquake and all that. But my gosh, I mean, just these different things that come out about him since he's been done playing football is just hilarious to me. And to think that he has been smuggling, you know, alcohol in his backpack before the game, it's just like one of those routines that you would never think anybody would be doing playing football. And I don't understand it. I don't understand how Marshawn Lynch was able to play with a buzz like that. I don't understand.
With one shot, it probably didn't do much of anything. I wonder if part of it was like a mental kind of like, okay, I'm getting the nerves out of the way, or this is for luck. Did anyone ever have a teammate ever have the weirdest pregame routine or superstition? It could be superstition. Was there a teammate or you that was like, I do not do this on game day, or I always have this on game day, and you were like, this makes no sense. I'm not going to question it, but you're insane.
Yeah, it wasn't definitely for me. It wasn't taking a shot and a half of Hennessy. I can promise you that. For me, I was more superstitious and oddly superstitious about like my routine, literally from what I was listening to at the time I was doing anything. So I had to listen to this song while I was putting on my football pants. I had to listen to this song while I was walking down the hall and going to the training room to get my ankles taped. Like, it was a odd obsession that I got myself in, and I hated myself, Stacey. I oftentimes thought to myself, who are you? Who is this person?
Did you ever break that trend? Did you ever try to test it scientifically to say, like, I'm not going to listen to this song this time and I'm going to see what changes because I'm sick of this song?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's partly something that I think was
too afraid to risk it.
No, it was a hard transition from high school to college. And that's why I'm going to say my college career wasn't what it needed to be, because my routine was broken. You know, I wasn't able to do the certain things that I did in high school that I did at the college level. And then somehow I played better when I got in the NFL and whatever. So the theory doesn't really hold up, but I'm just going to say it does.
Jake, I'm going to let you live your truth. Speaking of college ball, on Saturday, Vanderbilt's Sarah Fuller became the first woman to play in a Power 5 conference football game. So here's what happened. Vanderbilt's kickers were all out of the game because of COVID, so they had no options. The women's soccer team was already on campus. They were already participating, and she served then as their primary kicker, being an athlete who was available, who was able to execute the job and actually get it done. And she actually like executed a really nice little squib kick, and it wasn't a bad game for her, considering she was called in basically from my understanding of reading about this, kind of last minute to help out after they had players test positive for COVID. So awesome job with her. I know I saw some, you should always live by the motto of never reading the comments. And there were some people that were like, this is just PR and this is awful. And it's like, or they just needed someone to go in and help because this is a really weird circumstance. And they happen to have a college athlete ready and available to help out. So she handled it really well, handling it all with grace, and props to her. Awesome job, Sarah.
Yeah. No, awesome job, Sarah. The only thing that I would say, Stacey, that in terms of like the PR machine behind that, the only one thing that they did that I'm just curious about how that was set up was she addressed the team in the locker room before the game. And I'm wondering if that was set up by the team, if it was set up by her. I'm just curious as to what that was like. And I'm not saying it was a PR move for her to address the team, but she was only a part of the team for 1 week. And so I'm just curious what that message was to the team before they went out there. But outside of that, because that's just not a normal thing, you know, for someone to just be a
part of the team. You don't
think
it was someone for her to come out and be like, hey, are you saying it was a pregame speech or was it like a, hey guys, so I'm here to help out. I'm here to, you know, help place kicks.
No, it was a pregame speech. That was the only thing that I was like, That's kind of strange for someone, and it's not anything to do with Sarah. It's for any person. Like, imagine if I just walked in to the Vanderbilt locker room. It was playing for them for 1 week, and just said, "Hey, I'm going to address the team." You know, it was an interesting situation, but I wonder how that was teed up and set up, because that might have been a really impactful moment. That was the only thing that I was curious about. But outside of that, you know, hats off to Sarah for an amazing game. For, you know, like you said, executed squib kick. She did a great job stepping in. And I think that this really opens the door for college athletics, the NFL level, high school level, all across the country to look at the most talented kicker available. And that could be, you know, we used to have, in high school, our coaches, you know, look at and go through the men's soccer team, mm-hmm. and see if there was anybody that wanted to join the team to be kicker. You know, now you gotta look through the men and women's soccer team. You gotta look at all of it. And I think that it just opens the door for all of that. And I think it's really cool. And I would not be surprised if you see more and more women, you know, having that role with legitimate Power Five conference teams. Really cool moment.
I just think it's cool, and it really doesn't matter. I highly doubt anyone listening is like a hardcore Vanderbilt fan. I don't think anyone was that upset. And it was, if you're someone getting mad about something so trivial, like, oh my God, that must be exhausting. Like, I'm tired all the time. I can't imagine getting this mad about a woman place kicking for a team I don't even follow. You should just feel like it's a really cool opportunity. That's all I have to say about it. This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by the Pro Club. We're going to get back into college football, talking about UW's win over Utah next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios,
streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
From the 16, first and 10.
Watch the tight end down here at the bottom.
Morris looking that way, scrambling, fires, caught, Otten, touchdown, Washington!
That is your Washington Huskies overcoming a 21-point halftime deficit, one of the biggest comebacks in school history, by the way. Dylan Morris engineering that final drive. That was 12 plays, 88 yards, ends with a 16-yard touchdown to Otten. What a game. I was watching it. I don't know how you guys were watching it. I was watching it with some friends that were in town visiting for the holidays, and they're UW alum. And I think that everyone thought, like, is this going to happen? We're not entirely sure. Because there's kind of versions of this team that we don't know yet. It's not really battle-tested yet. And that, Jake, was one way to become quickly battle-tested. And they certainly proved themselves.
I mean, wow. Wow, wow, wow. That was an incredible game. And my viewing experience was a little different. I watched it. I watched the first half live. And then Jackson was like, hey, Dad, could we watch like a Christmas movie? And I was like, all right, I'll pause this. I'll watch it later. So I had to pause. We were watching Christmas Chronicles 2 on Netflix, which I highly suggest. That was fantastic. And we've already watched it like five times already.
I believe
Jackson's
it.
Obsessed with it. But then I go and watch the second half, and I thought to myself, there's no way that they're going to come back from this game.
Yeah.
Dylan Morris doesn't look like he is handling pressure well. They are getting stuffed at the line of scrimmage. And the Washington Huskies, who have rushed for over 200 yards per game, only rushed for 88 yards in this one. And a huge difference in the way that Jimmy Lake wants to play and John Donovan wants to call this offense. But Utah was very physical at the point of attack and really forced them to play a different style of game. And, I mean, you watch that second half. Obviously, they were able to generate turnovers. Dylan Morris really came alive in that second half. He threw one more pick, but, gosh, he had some really impressive throws. I was so proud of him. Know him personally, worked with him, know him and the family personally. And it just was a great moment for him to be able to overcome some early in-game struggles and to really, truly build some confidence at the end. I thought that was outstanding for Dylan Morris himself and his progression, but also outstanding for this team that they can have more confidence to go to the pass if need be.
Dylan Morris finishes 23 of 38, 272, two touchdowns, three interceptions. The majority of those mistakes, misfires and interceptions coming in the first half. They get kind of a turnaround early in the third quarter with a nice little interception by Molden. What did this team prove to us? What did the Huskies prove in this win?
Well, what they proved is that this is Jimmy Lake's team. And what I mean by that is, to me, this was an awesome win in his cap. That it showed the togetherness of this program. It showed Jimmy Lake's leadership style to its fullest, that there wasn't any flinch to this team, that they were able to take all of the adversity that they had in the first half and keep fighting and keep swinging and keep, you know, plugging away. And this defense created a couple key turnovers, and that really sparked their comeback. It was really fun to watch this team really battle back. And these are the types of wins that you build a ton of momentum and a ton of confidence in one another. And you see an interception from Elijah Molden that was outstanding. Mm-hmm. He will be a high draft pick. Zion Tupelo-Fetty just is a man amongst boys out there, continues to absolutely dominate out on the edge. This was one of those moments in terms of their defense being able to set the tone early, which really led to the offense really picking it up and being able to put it in the end zone. So overall, I thought this was a really nice tip of the cap for Jimmy Lake. And you can see that this program has a true identity of who they are, what they want to do, and the culture that's within that program.
Man, Jake, I'm a former Husky. I'm trying to get excited about this program. I mean, I am excited, trying to talk about the game. And look what you did. The whole text line is talking about Christmas Chronicles. Like, I'm trying to talk about this defense. Watching this defense is fun. Big win for Jimmy Lake's
Christmas
team
Chronicles
in a weird year.
Two?
And the entire text line just going off right now. Christmas Chronicles 1, Christmas Chronicles 2.
I'm telling you. Here's a couple bold takes here. One, Christmas Chronicles 2 is better than the first one. I don't think that's a bold take.
Sequel rarely but better than the first. That's interesting.
But it is.
The Dark Knight Rises and then Christmas Chronicles 2.
I know I'm going to spark the text line with this one.
Okay.
I think that Kurt Russell is the perfect Santa Claus. He is the perfect Santa Claus. Yes, that is an air horn right there. I know people will be upset because they all have their version of Santa that they love, but Kurt Russell is Santa Claus. Fantastic.
Now, I don't have a child. Can I still watch the Christmas Chronicles?
Yes, you can, Stacey. Do you believe in Christmas magic?
1,000%.
Absolutely.
Okay, good, because I've been watching. I watch Elf every year. That's my go-to favorite Christmas movie. We'll do a Christmas movie draft at a later date. Let's get back to Washington real quick. We've got a couple more minutes here. They now slip into first place, correct, in the Pac-12 North. Are they legitimately like the cream of the crop as far as the Pac-12 goes? We've had a handful of games, so many cancellations. It feels like such a stretch to say that. But are they right where you wanted them to be without COVID, when you were looking at what you wanted from a first year under Jimmy Lake, is this exactly where they should be and where you wanted them to be?
Well, I will say yes, from the standpoint that I think that he's been able to come in year one and establish the tone in terms of the physicality in which they want to play, the toughness in which they want to play. He's got those guys playing hard. And you can see that they are bought into what they're doing. Over the last couple of years, you saw a lack of enthusiasm, a lack of energy, a lack of cohesiveness, and a true identity, particularly on the offensive side of the ball. Who is this team? Mm-hmm. What are they going to do that makes them successful? And they could not find that. We know that they want to be a hard-nosed, downhill, running attack. And you got to see on Saturday that if that's not working, that was my biggest question. When you face a better opponent and that is not working, do they have what it takes to mm-hmm. have a passing attack led by Dylan Morris that can combat some of those issues? And they were able to step up to the challenge. And so I think right now you have to be very excited if you're a Husky fan of what Jimmy Lake has been able to do, what they've been able to produce out on the field, and their chances of winning the Pac-12 this year. I think they have a tremendous chance of getting that done.
And I can't stress that enough, you guys. For Dylan Morris, 88-yard drive. And it ends with a touchdown, that touchdown coming with 36 seconds left. I mean, that is a clutch moment. That's where that clutch gene conversation comes in. That's such a tired conversation to have in sports radio sometimes. But I think he proved a lot. I mean, that was like a grown person ending to that game. Also, way to go, Jake. Now the text line is talking about Kurt Russell. Stop steering the text line in weird directions right now. First, it's Christmas Chronicles. Now it's Kurt Russell. I don't know what we're doing here.
I'm sorry. I have to throw it out there. It's the holiday season, Stacey. We're probably going to have a lot more Christmas takes coming up here.
I don't like it. All right.
Why?
Because I haven't seen the movie. You know I hate when conversations happen and I'm not able to chime in. It kills me. You hate
being left out.
Nothing bothers me more than not being able to talk.
Maybe you should stop watching those trashy reality shows and start really
diving in and investing on
all the Christmas shows that are out there.
The Bravo lineup is fantastic. And Curtis knows that Netflix's reality shows are solid. The Circle, Too Hot to Handle, Love is Blind. All of those have been phenomenal installments in their catalog. So just you'll have your Christmas Chronicles. I'll have the Real Housewives franchise. It's fine. It's fine. Everyone's happy. All right. We're going to get back to a conversation we had briefly to open, but we've got plenty more to say. How can the Seahawks defense prove tonight that they're heading in the right direction? That's next.